Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to We're Drunk and We Know Things, recorded live outside Crafty J's in St. Helier, Jersey.
Oh.
It's Saturday afternoon!
It's Saturday night!
No,
it's your Saturday musical guest!
Are we not doing Saturday Night Live?
We could, to be honest. I mean, I watched the last one. It was like, what?
No,
Jesus.
It's not a thing anymore.
It's gone
is
to
it?
Seed.
It is bad. So, it is bad.
Anyway, or maybe it's just I'm too old for their comedy. I'm not. It's
Are you
just
saying
not
that
funny.
You're too old for that shit?
Oh!
Oh! That's why we win awards, baby. That's why we win awards.
So, after last episode's deep dive into the wonderful world of cryptocurrency, which is currently now worth like £3 million.
Exactly, I've retired from podcasting. I live on my yacht in France.
I mean, we're having to pay you, right?
Yeah.
This is coming in on a live satellite feed.
And I only
feed.
Accept Ethereum.
Oh, he went to the dark side. He went to the dark.
Yeah.
He went straight to the dark.
That's where the real money is.
We are doing something a little bit lighter. We are discussing two of our favourite action films.
My two favourite action films.
Hang on, wait. Is it two of our two? There's two of us.
It's certainly
There's
one
two
of them.
Two of them.
Yeah.
Which one? We'll get to that. yeah, we're basically just going to spend the next hour and a bit talking about Lethal Weapon 1 and 2.
Yeah!
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So Lethal Weapon. Are we going to tackle them one at a time? Two at a time?
Well, I think we kind of have... There's some bits that we have to do separately and some bits we can do together quite naturally.
Let's talk about them in a general term, first of all.
Well, let's talk about them in terms of Lethal Weapon 1.
Lethal Weapon 1
or just Lethal Weapon.
Is arguably the greatest action film that's ever been made.
Ooh.
That argument is to be made by me now.
Okay. Do you want to have an argument?
Lethal Weapon's better than Die Hard. That is the end of the conversation. It is directed by Richard Donner. Oh, my God. For the first time ever, I actually, for some reason, thought you were going to open hand slap me across the face.
I was thinking about it.
Lethal Weapon's better than Die Hard.
It's not.
Of course it is.
Definitely not.
Don't be ridiculous. What are we even doing here? Come on.
Firstly, Lethal Weapon is not the Lethal Weapon film that you think you're watching if you've watched any of the others. Lethal
that's
Weapon
true.
Is dark,
no, that's
it's depressing,
true. Yeah.
It's not funny
That's why it's
at
good.
All.
That's why it's fantastic.
It has a terrible, terribly good, but also very in-your-face soundtrack.
It's an amazing soundtrack, don't be ridiculous. It's Eric Clapton. You're being crazy right now. Mel right. Gibson gives an incredible performance.
He does.
Honest to God, I know we're joking.
Danny Glover gives
he really
a
does.
Performance.
He really does give a good performance in this. And it's one of those things where you're like, shit, Mel Gibson, he is good, isn't he?
He was good.
He was, yeah. Oh, it's been a
now
long time.
He's a nut.
Do you know he's 30 in this film?
I thought you were going to say he's 30 now. Like, no,
he's,
no.
He's 30. When he's playing, he's meant to be 38. And he's 30. Danny Glover is 40 and he's playing 50.
Right, hang on. We're getting straight into it.
Yeah, we are.
Let's, no.
All right.
We have a whole other thing we need to talk about.
What's that?
Everything else.
Oh, yeah, right. The news segment.
Also, stop calling it the news segment. We
Very
got
excited.
Advice from our legal team.
We did.
That it's not news.
It's not news.
By the time we've suggested that something might happen, it's either happened or hasn't.
It's points of interest.
Of a time.
Yes.
So, what you got?
I've got a big old thing I want to talk about.
Well, go on then, because I'm still finding my notes.
Fine, which is the there's a new Switch coming out, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the big old thing. That's
now, bear in mind,
number.
This is the problem with the news, right? Because it's before
it might
E3.
Be out.
When's E3?
Tomorrow. Yeah, on 30 days of December. It's 31st of May it starts. So it starts Monday. So what's new about it is it's going to be supposedly a 4K screen for a tablet screen for a handheld.
It won't be a 4K tablet screen.
Supposedly... A Samsung 4K handheld screen. It's going to have more robust guts, as every article I've read, basically. So that you get proper, like, what's
they
it, 60 frames per second?
An NVIDIA system on chip.
Yeah, yeah. So you get,
so
like, 60 frames per second, so you can do proper high-end.
60 FPS, and it will output 4K docked.
So
that is almost guaranteed.
This won't change the fact that it is a system that runs off of tiny little cartridges, so you still won't get the PS5 games unless they're cloud-based, like Hitman 3 and stuff like that. I guess.
Well, the tiny little cartridges can hold a lot of information.
But can they hold as much as a PS5 disc?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then, ask and answer, and that'll be fine then. Oh, I didn't know that.
So you know a micro SD card that's the size of my thumbnail?
Yeah, having said that, I've got like a terabyte one in my Switch. So, not a terabyte one, but I've got a really big one in my Switch. So, yeah.
So, I mean, basically, they're just that, right? They're a micro SD card in a cartridge these days.
Regardless, there's a new Switch coming out, apparently, and it's going to be really good. And I'm going to buy one.
All right.
Because I haven't got enough Switches.
Who's going to get it first?
I don't know. Probably pre-order one at the same time. As soon as I find a place that I can pre-order one, I'll tell you so you can too, because you're my friend.
You've got an advantage.
What's that?
Well, you can get things shipped through the UK and I can't.
Well, I'll get two shipped because you're my friend and I want you to have one because I want you to be happy.
Fuck you, dude. That's fucking beautiful.
And then one of us can sell our old one to our producer so
both
he can finally...
Both
yeah, he's got to buy both.
Get two.
He's got to buy both, I think.
Yeah, one in each hand. Double
switching
it.
There's no point.
Double switching it.
Double switching it. There's no point otherwise. One for handheld travel and one for in your own home.
Carrying on with the Switch theme,
yes.
We have had announced that there is the Zelda re-release of Skyward Sword, which is still penciled in for... I want to say July. It's like after my
July
birthday.
July the 12th or 15th or something. I pre-ordered it.
We'll have a new amiibo.
Yes.
Amiibo, people, for those who don't
which
care.
Which people are up in arms about because they apparently don't understand what an amiibo was, even though they've been around forever. It's
basically,
very odd.
The amiibo will allow a function in the game that was not in the original game. Firstly, don't do that. You know, don't change the fundamental playing dynamic of a game.
No, that's fair. Okay, that's fair. I haven't played Skyward Sword, so
if you're going to do it, just do it consistently. Don't make people shell out an extra 30 quid.
You've pre-ordered it, though, haven't you?
Yeah, totally. but mostly because I have all of the other Zelda amiibos, so...
Sure, of course.
I like them. They're cute.
I've not got any amiibos.
I tell you what, they are the best thing I've ever put on a windowsill to have a cat knock off.
Nice.
They do it deliberately. I shit you not. They go up there and they're like...
Mine was the Hope Diamond.
Ping, the Hope Diamond.
Yeah, I put it on the shelf and the cat knocked off.
The actual Hope.
Yeah, I had to send it back.
Oh.
Because the cat kept knocking it off.
Did a diamond chip?
It was just so annoying to keep hearing it clang to the ground.
Fair.
Just send it back.
Did they clang?
It did. People don't know that about diamonds. When they hit the ground, they make a real clang. Oh, yeah. It's a real like
ringing note.
Like in a cartoon when someone gets hit with a frying pan.
Oh.
It's like that kind of clang.
Fair. I mean, to be honest, I've never had a large diamond.
You were right to say we shouldn't call this the news segment.
my bullion collection, when that hits the ground, that's more of a dull funk.
Sure. Because that falls onto felt.
Your whole
house is carpeted like the top of a snooker table.
Well, the bits that have gold in it, it's more of a poker table.
More than anything.
So that you can deal straight up the hallway.
I'm enjoying seeing our producer's
on the
face why we do this bit so much.
He's sitting very quiet.
So unhappy.
So the Lofwing amiibo, anyway, Zelda and Lofwing, it's two people.
Yep.
It costs more than a normal amiibo.
Yes.
Which is like...
It's 30 quid, right?
I suppose, to be fair, I'm being a little bit... That's a little bit my privilege showing. I'm like, it's 30 quid, it's 15 quid. Who gives a shit? It's a thing that you buy to go with a computer game.
Yeah.
It's definitely not
a
staple.
It's always a waste of money, whether it's 30 quid or 15, so who gives a fuck?
My cat will still knock it off the window
sill.
Yeah,
exactly.
We're all good.
The same as the other ones.
But yeah, it will enable some form of fast travel through the game.
Yep.
And people are pissed.
So it's also the 30th anniversary of One Master Sonic M. Hedgehog. Next year.
What's the M stand for?
It's not. It's the thing I just made that up. Sonic Hedgehog. Sonic the Hedgehog.
Master Sonic T Hedgehog.
They're going to release
Tiberius.
Sonic Colors, which is a Wii game. I'm moving swiftly forward.
Re-released
Sonic Colors, which is a Wii game, which is apparently very good, but I've not played it because it was on the Wii U and nobody had a Wii U. They're also going to re-release a full Sonic collection that's basically every single Sonic game. I like Sonic. I know you were never a Sega kid.
I like Sonic.
I would definitely get it. Sonic Mania is amazing. So
referenced, we both play a racing game that's based on the kind of arcade hits of 16-bit.
Horizon Zero?
It's called Horizon Zero.
Yep.
Sonic falls into the same category, which is you have to be incredibly focused for the entire game.
Yeah, you really do. Sonic is one of those games.
I just want to bounce around.
Sonic is one of those games where it's like, hey, no, the point of this game is to run really incredibly fast the whole time. But also, if you do that, it's almost impossible.
But
it's a nightmare.
When you're in the zone.
Oh yeah.
Okay, cool. So we've got good Sonic-y stuff, and I think we didn't touch on it last time because it was all about cryptocurrency, and that felt a little bit like navel gazing.
Yeah.
It's over to our producer to discuss what's going on in the wonderful world of non-fungible tokens.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
So, NFTs are still a thing.
Still?
Yeah.
They might not be when this goes out.
Who would have thunk it?
I mean, considering that we mentioned
that a
single pixel had sold, you think that would be the end of it. But no, they're still a thing.
Yep.
So, in the news, people have decided to take internet memes...
Yes.
And NFT them because that seems like a logical thing. So you've had recently... Do you know the YouTube clip of Charlie Bit My Finger?
Unfortunately, yes. Yes, yeah, I do.
I don't. What the fuck is this about?
Do you really not know Charlie Bit My Finger?
So
turns out, in some very specific ways, I do live under a rock.
That's insane. So it's
mostly, when people send me a thing, which is a baby, I'm just like, I don't want to watch this.
But Charlie Bit My Finger is... It's like the formation of YouTube. That's why YouTube is a thing. It's
so anyway, congratulations, Rob, for missing this because I'm jealous.
But yeah, it is.
It's a very early YouTube clip that went quite viral. It's essentially a toddler and a baby, and one of them bites the other's finger.
He puts his finger in the baby's mouth, and then the baby bites him, and then he goes like, "Oh, Charlie bit my finger!" Yeah. And it's like, "Yeah, but you put your finger in his mouth." It's stupid.
So nonsense, but it was very early meme stuff. So this video clip, the rights owners, I assume the parents of the children.
Hang on, no, how long ago was it? Because those children are not children anymore,
it's like 10 years ago, more than that, 12 years ago.
So it's like, have we checked that this isn't just some 16-year-old cashing in on his 14-year-old brother?
They've been on like great, you know, Big Fat Quiz of the Year and that kind of stuff and been like, who am I? And it's like, oh, I'm Charlie. And he's like a teenager now.
Yeah, strangely, like human's age. So,
all right, shit, Snippy.
He's not wrong.
Give him a segment on the podcast, real pain in the ass.
So they decided to NFT this and actually pulled the clip from YouTube up to the auction. The auction happened the other day. It sold for, guess an amount, Mike.
I know how much.
Okay.
I know.
Rob, guess an amount.
I don't know, 2 million quid.
It seems like a bargain because it went for 761,000.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Didn't even make a mil.
No. And Charlie bit my finger.
And it's barely worth getting out of bed.
And more importantly, the owner of the NFT has now put it back on YouTube. So yeah.
And killed himself. No, it's not true.
So did the owner of the hang on? Did Charlie buy it?
Charlie bought it off.
So, There seemed to be a bidding war. None of the people bidding were named Charlie, so...
Well, obviously you're not going to bid under your own name.
Oh, okay, I mean...
Jeez, okay. Robbie.
It's Charles.
Chuck.
They'll never suspect. Yeah. Chuck, yeah.
And, yeah, so that was the thing. And it would be quite interesting if it's going to lead to NFTs being rights of video clips.
Yeah.
But well, I think on that note... I have an NFT update.
Okay.
Well, I will interject into memedom because I feel.
Please do.
I feel almost certain we're coming back to internet memes.
Oh, we are.
Of course we are. Quincy Jones.
Yes.
Quincy Jones.
Rashida Jones's dad.
The guy from the TV show.
You just have to take my word for it. Yeah.
Okay. At your Bankley.
And from Baltimore. No,
Quincy MD.
No.
Probably one of. To my mind, one of the best producers in the world.
Absolutely.
Ever.
It's the band from... no, that's the Count Basie Orchestra. Ignore me. Sinatra at the Sands is Count Basie Orchestra. It's not Quincy Jones. Although Quincy Jones was in Count Basie's orchestra.
Briefly.
Yes.
Yes. No, Quincy Jones, of course, did Michael Jackson's...
Thriller?
River?
No, the other one. The early
Bad.
One.
Bad.
No.
Off the Wall.
Off the Wall, thank you.
Yes.
And basically...
And he produced Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
He has also... Sure.
He did.
He has decided that he's going to form his own NFT network and platform. They're calling it One Of. And ostensibly what they're trying to do is find an environmentally friendly way to do NFTs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not just like jumping on Ether or whatever.
Right.
And it's focused entirely on music and musical acts so that artists can release basically single pressings, as it were, of their tracks. And
like Martin Shkreli when he bought that Wu-Tang album.
One of the weirdest things is, the story I initially read said that various artists have signed up, including Whitney Houston.
Wait, what?
I'm pretty sure Whitney Houston isn't signing up for shit right now, I think the estate of Whitney Houston may have done.
Depends how they've been planning this, I suppose.
Prince has got loads of albums that have never been released, hasn't he? So maybe Whitney Houston has got stuff that unlikely
Michael
to be unreleased videos.
Michael Jackson had a posthumous number one.
Yes.
So... Yes. I'm not too worried about that. It's not just the way it was phrased.
Yeah.
But yeah, so musical NFTs. Also, they're doing this through a platform that lets you pay with a credit card rather than crypto. Very much trying to aim at the masses.
Yes, much more accessible than our previous episode would suggest.
I wouldn't even know how you start. Well, actually, I'm lying. I don't know how you start buying an
NFT. We're clearly doing an episode where Mike buys an NFT, right? That's the next Mike does a thing.
Yes,
right?
But we have to find a really shitty one.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be awful.
We do an episode where we create our own NFT.
Oh, I'm creating NFTs every day.
Of the podcast.
Nice.
Yeah. Ooh.
Wheels within wheels.
Oh, amazing.
Just to be clear, you can't do that unless you're us. We own the copyright.
Yeah. Podcasts. Other podcasts.
Anyway.
Yeah. So could an NFT just be audio then?
Yeah.
Doesn't it have to be a video? I thought it had to be like a GIF.
Mike, we talked about them selling a pixel.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. We did, yeah.
So, to round up, going back to memes,
yes.
Do you know who Harambe was?
I'm aware of Harambe. Rest in peace.
I am aware of Harambe. Okay.
Justice for Harambe, goddammit.
Yeah, poor man's Jambo, if anything.
Poor man's Jambo, not wrong.
It's pretty much an in-joke.
Jersey
people
represent.
Who aren't in Jersey, just Google him.
Yeah, Jambo.
Well, you know.
Not the Chinese restaurant.
If a child
also
falls...
a Jersey in-joke. What is wrong with you?
Oh, yeah.
So if a child falls into a gorilla enclosure and you're not in America, we don't shoot the gorilla and it becomes internet famous. It just becomes famous.
Yeah. Gorilla's just awesome and they make a statue out of it and you can sit on it when you go to the zoo.
The photo of Harambe that became a meme is being auctioned on the 5th anniversary of his death.
Right.
By being shot.
His murder.
Well, he still died.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's generally what murder entails.
And they've not yet got any idea of what it's going to sell for. But, again, it's a meme, so you're not going to get rights to it unless you're going to start to...
No, like, well, you're going to go like, apply to Google and say, I own the rights to this, take all of the images down on the internet.
And they went, Harambe? Oh, okay.
Let's be honest, the world is populated currently by meme-mad teenagers who are recently incredibly wealthy by virtue of GameStop and God knows
what. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Buying Dogecoin.
Let's let them have an auction. They can buy a monkey.
Yes, let's let them do that. It's definitely up to us.
I didn't realise it was in your
let's
power.
Let's let them do it.
So anyway, that's...
Maybe not let's let them.
No,
let's
I understand what you mean, of
not
course.
Care.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I agree. So yeah, that's NFT watch.
Amazing.
Superb.
I mean, there's more that's happened,
just
but
an
it's
update.
Just
are
as
they
boring.
Are they fungible yet?
They're still not fungible.
They're still non-fungible. Okay,
I mean,
just wanted
if you come onto FT Watch, then you'll know that they may have become fungible.
Fungible tokens.
Or...
Also known as just trades?
Or
bartering?
Or we're just doing the Financial Times crossword.
Really? Weren't the fungible tokens the friends we made along the way?
Yeah, the anyway. Joke about the Financial Times crossword?
No.
Very similar to a pig's penis.
How so?
Pink and hard.
Nice. Oh, God.
Ba-dum.
So let's get to the... I did the guitar mime, but I did the saxophone noise. That was weird. Let's get to the episode proper then.
All right, Lethal Weapon's made in 1987.
All right, grumpy Gus, because he wants to get to Lethal Weapon 2.
It was directed by...
The not as good one.
Richard Donner.
It was directed by Richard Donner. How much did it cost to make it?
I don't know. That's
$50 million.
Kind of
and it made $120 million.
Oh, it made more than that.
Did it?
Well, I'm assuming over time. I mean, I bought it at least
I mean, out of DVD
times.
Sales, yeah, probably, yeah. I guess, yeah. It's awesome. It's got great people in it. It's written by Shane Black, who is a king among screenwriters.
Shane Black started writing it earlier in the 80s.
He did.
Apparently, he had... Do you want to talk casting briefly, or should we do the plot summary? We've got to do this twice, bear in mind.
Well, should we do the plot summary all the way through for 1 and 2? Because it's the same cast
sure.
and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you on the other side, dear listener, in about an hour.
Well, do we need to do a whole plot summary, really, for Lethal Weapon 1 and 2? Okay,
so,
fine.
Lethal Weapon, the first one.
Danny Glover, he's 50, he's in a bath, his kids are there, they put a cloth over his penis
We're
so they don't see
it. We're not doing that much detail.
They Anyway, he's
retiring.
Danny
Glover turns 50, he gets
he's
a new partner.
Yes.
His new partner is...
Martin Riggs.
Recently transferred in from narcotics. And also clearly suffering from massive PTSD after the death of his wife.
Yes, and they but the cops are like, mental health isn't a thing. Actually, he's just trying to draw a psycho
pension.
We're
just going to transfer him to this guy and put him in homicide.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
On this guy who's retiring like a week later or something. So anyway, so you're traffic duty, exactly. Anyway. He's registered as a lethal weapon, supposedly, this guy, because he's such a badass. Matthew Hunsaker, who is an old Army Vietnam
army
war buddy,
of
Murtaugh. Roger Murtaugh, contacts him and is like, oh, I need to talk to you about something. In the meantime, unknown to him, his
We've
daughter...
We've watched his daughter
get
thrash us
out,
all
jump
and
out,
then jump out of a building.
Jumps out a window, lands on a car. And then the Dixie, the police, the prostitute's like, "Officer, officer, I saw the whole thing."
Long story short, turns out that...
You asked to do this on this podcast. Why are you so unhappy about talking about it?
Because we've got two of them to do, and if you keep going to this much detail, we're going to be here until Tuesday. No, long story short.
Yes.
There is an entire plot to this film, which is almost completely irrelevant to the reason this film is great.
Oh, it doesn't matter at all.
So, the first film, we have two of them. Buddy cop good times ensue. Yes. They don't trust each other.
No.
Because, they frankly, Riggs Maybe keeps we'll trying to kill himself.
Enough. Maybe we'll live long enough so I can buy you a present. It's the least I could do after all the kindness you've shown me.
Yeah. Ooh.
I could literally sit here and do the entirety of the script of this film.
Might be more entertaining than this podcast.
But yeah, anyway, So it turns out that Huntsacker, his old war buddy, is still involved in Air America, which is coincidentally also a film starring Mel Gibson.
But basically, it's a CIA operation that was flying stuff into and out of various parts of Asia.
Yes, they were funding the war, which is a real thing. They were funding the war with heroin, basically. The CIA were. That's continued after the war, and they're continuing to ship heroin from the East into America. He's involved in that, so they kill his daughter because he wants to talk to the police as a warning. He doesn't listen to the warning.
He has another daughter who we do not see.
No,
tits or any
better. You do see
her
in the yearbook, but then he gets shot through an eggnog carton from a helicopter because this movie is the fucking best. And
the helicopter, arrives vertically.
It's incredible.
Nobody hears it until it enters the shot.
yeah. Riggs is trying to shoot it. Well, there's a lot
with
of that.
A handgun.
He's trying to shoot with a Beretta way further away that he should be able to. But anyway, that Beretta, by the way, same hero replica used in Lethal Weapon 2 and in Die Hard by John McClane.
Yeah.
Coolest prop of all time.
All right.
Well, one of them. Anyway, so he tries to shoot a helicopter down. It turns out that Gary Busey, or Gadabuse, as we used to say back in the day, he is Mr. Joshua, and he was in Shadow Company, along with the dad from Dharma and Greg.
He's a dirty merc.
It's the dad from Dharma and Greg. Don't look at me like that, producer. I know what I'm talking about. I love Dharma and Greg. I love Lethal Weapon. Everybody knows that about me. Anyway, it's a bad thing. They're in the back of a strip club, and then they get captured because they kidnap the daughter, and then they go and save the daughter, but it all gets fucked up because they think Reese is dead, and they get captured, and then they electrocute him, and they beat up Murtaugh, but then they escape, and he's like... And he kills everyone. He does a Riggs run, and he runs down the highway like he does in all Shane Black films. They run down the highway, and he jumps down the bridge, and then Joshua crashes his car, and then Murtaugh gets the other bad guy, and then the grenade goes off. He's like, "You got what was coming to you, son of a bitch." And then Riggs fights him with BJJ on the lawn outside Murtaugh's house, and he's like, "Get that shit off my lawn! Get him, kid! Get him, Riggs! Get him!" And then he beats him up with BJJ, and he gets in the triangle choke, and he chokes him out, and then he's like, "Oh, I'm not going to kill you because it's not worth it." But then he steals the gun off another policeman, and then they both get a gun and they both shoot Mr. Joshua, and that's the end of the film, and it's awesome. And then they go
the end of the film.
Then they go to Christmas dinner, and he brings Sam, and it upsets Burbank the cat.
And also, he gives Murtaugh a hollow point bullet with his own name on it.
I'm actually.
I love that's you being concise. I'll describe everything that happened.
But that was quick.
The last scene.
How much was that? That was great.
2 years later.
2 years later. No. So this one. They introduce a more comedic element because it's not purely written by Shane Black.
They introduced comedy.
Yes. There are funny bits in the first one. There are a few funny bits.
Not really.
There are bits. You've got to look out for them, but there are funny bits.
All right.
But yeah, anyway, so the second one is a Shane Black script that was then rewritten by Jeffrey Boehm, who wrote the third one. But he rewrote this script, the original script that Shane Black wrote, I think it's called Pretty Dirty? Play Dirty? It just sounds amazing, but it's never been released for anybody to be able to read it. But he wrote this incredibly dark script where Riggs dies.
Ooh.
And then Jeffrey Boehm rewrote it. The whole thing with the second one is while they were filming it, they decided that Rika died. So they filmed an ending where Patsy Kensit and Riggs go for Thanksgiving dinner with the Murtaughs. They filmed that. But then they decided halfway through it would be better if they killed her.
No, just going to kill her.
Yeah, just kill her. Give him more pathos.
So quick plot summary of the second film. That was what I was going for. Okay. We were meant to be going straight through.
Well, you do this one. I did the last one.
All right, this one's more complicated.
Yeah, that's why I'm letting you do it.
So, he's in a shed. No, that's the third one.
That is the third one. We open on a car chase. He's chasing a South African guy, but we don't know that yet. He
chasing two South African guys. They're being chased because of possible drugs.
Okay, fine.
What?
They think it's just one guy in the car.
No, but there's two car chases going on at the same time.
Oh, yes. Okay, fine. Fine. I'll allow it.
They then, basically, at the end of the car chase, after some fairly good car chasing action, it's a thriller of an opener.
It's really good. But it opens in media res, right? Not in media res, it opens in the middle of the action, like real, it's really good. They're in the new station wagon.
And, we are introduced to Murtaugh's new car, which is the funniest fucking thing about this film.
It just gets fucked up the whole way through the film.
At the end of the car chase, the South African driver of the car crashes. Mm. They don't know he's South African yet, by the way.
No.
They think he might be German.
Yes.
Because they're American.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like English that we talk.
It must be German.
Let's just name European countries.
Yeah, exactly.
Could have saved yourselves a bit of trouble there, boys. Just saying. Crash the car. Turns out the boot is full of Krugerrands, which are solid gold.
$1 million worth, no
less. At least. And you can't import them.
I'm just checking I wasn't standing on plastic.
The guy who was driving the car is introduced to the big bad. The big bad in this movie you play by?
The man that plays him, that I'm going to have to quickly look up his name. I don't know. I can't know the names off the top of my head. I'm not an insane
person.
He's
a fairly famous actor. He was in Bill and Ted 2.
Oh, yes. Joss Ackland is the man's
name. Joss Ackland.
Yes.
Who basically is accompanied by... a rather dodgily, it's his real hair, but it shouldn't be. It looks like a toupee.
Derek O'Connor, he's actually an Irish actor, that guy.
Yeah.
He
looks
it. Yeah.
Who shoots him. Yes. So basically, we've established that a bunch of South Africans are badasses.
Mm.
And then.
And then Riggs and Murtaugh get assigned to protect a witness who is.
Oh, yeah, we get the subplot.
Yes.
But it turns out the subplot's actually related.
Yes.
Because it turns out that he's a witness
against
the South Africans.
It was two cases all along, just like every other Shane Black movie ever. I love Shane Black. I love him.
Yeah. The witness is played by Joe Pesci in his most irritating role ever.
Okay.
Literally, he is the worst.
So apparently, the way that the script was written, he was meant to be, like, really effeminate and, like, basically he's, like, coded as gay, basically. Like, really camp and, like... But, like, shitty, horrible action movie gay guy in an 80s movie. And he was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. That's rubbish. I'm going to do it like this. And Richard Donner was like, all right.
But, I mean, don't get me wrong. It works, but it is annoying.
Yes.
It's like having a toothache. You just can't stop.
He's very sweet all the way through it.
He is.
He's a sweet
quite innocent
character.
He's very short.
He is very short. I'll give you that.
So, anyway, they're looking after him.
Yeah.
He gets an assassination attempt by another one of the South Africans who forces Riggs to take a header out of a hotel window.
Yeah.
And you get another amazing set piece.
And he says to him, he says to Rog, you're not meant to be my partner, why didn't you come down after me? He's like, you came out of an 8-story window.
They then somehow connect it to another swimming pool where there are girls.
So what it is it's he is a Leo Getz, because whatever you want, Leo Getz. He is a launderer, a money launderer for drug smugglers, who are basically the South Africans. He remembers something about a house and being number 9.
There we go.
So he goes.
That's the link I needed.
Yeah. So
they then go to house number 9. Yeah. They meet two ladies who are fully clothed because there are no tits in this one.
No.
Actually, there are. But they're only Patsy and
one of them is Stephanie from Baywatch, by the way. But anyway, moving on.
How do you know this shit?
Because Lethal Weapon, man, it's my favourite shit.
Yeah, no, but how do you know Baywatch?
Oh, because I watched Baywatch when I was a kid. Some people stand in the darkness.
Right. They get there, manage to not kill the guy by shooting him in the leg. And then managed to kill him by dropping him in a swimming pool.
Onto the pool cover where he drowns.
Where he drowns.
Yeah.
Like this. And then they end up at the Stillwellhouse.
And then they chase him, there's a whole thing, and the guy gets his head chopped off with the surfboard.
Oh, no, there's a car chase.
Yes.
There's another car chase.
Yep.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yep.
It's a car chase that makes California look beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Beverly Hills.
I'm pretty sure bits of that car chase were used in a Bond film, bits of that road.
Maybe.
But anyway.
I've no doubt. I wouldn't be surprised. So anyway, so they do
they
that, and then they go into Stillwellhouse, and then it's like diplomatic immunity.
It turns out that they're South African diplomats, and we can't touch them. I mean, they can't touch them.
Oh my god! Except this film's understanding of what diplomatic immunity is
stretched,
not the best.
It's absolute, I think,
yeah,
and very inaccurate.
So Arjun's like, you can't do anything. Also, Patsy Kensit works for me and Martin Riggs wants to fuck her.
So Martin Riggs then goes on a little campaign where he just trolls Arjun by showing up at places then breaks into his office, which I'm pretty sure is entirely illegal.
Eeny, meeny, miny, hey, mo.
And then, you know, shoots the breeze, shoots the shit, shoots his fish.
That's, pick them up with your hands.
And do what?
Yeah, I know. Pick them up with your hands.
As opposed to what?
It's so good.
Was there some guy just bending down like, no.
And then
he
pursues Rika.
He bumps into Rika in a supermarket by stalking her.
Yeah, by stalking her, yeah.
To be fair, Rika, played by Patsy Kensit, is...
She's right.
Almost there in most of the scenes she's in.
She's pretty good. She's pretty good.
Yeah. He then takes her back to his place, explains that he used to be married.
Wait, before that happens, in order to break into the South African embassy office, Rog and Joe Pesci go to the South African embassy.
He's like, he wants to emigrate to South Africa.
I need you to tell my friend Antoine not to go to South Africa. Well, it must be some mistake. But you're black. It's so fucking funny. Right, free South Africa, you dumb son of a bitch.
Also, at some point, they've issued a warning to the police department to just back off.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
I'm not sure where that comes, but so it's very important.
That's right at the beginning when they're like, they duct tape them and say, yeah, I'd be going fucking bananas if I were you, thinking about what I'd done to your kids and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So, anyway.
So, they then declare war on the police, essentially. They kill all the other police in their platoon? Squad?
Squad.
They kill everybody else.
In some fairly creative ways.
They try
including, by the way, the guy who played the mutant guy from Total Recall. He's in this.
Yes, he is. Yes. As is Johnson. As in Johnson & Johnson from Die Hard. He's in the first one as well. No relation. He's in that as well.
Yeah.
So they kill all of them. They try to kill Riggs by...
Riggs, meanwhile, has taken Rika back to his place to cook her dinner. And basically just... fuck her brains out.
And at one point they make a really big point about how he's on the wagon, he doesn't drink anymore, except in the previous repeatedly loads of scenes where he drinks beer.
It's American beer.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's basically not alcoholic. But yeah, so they do all that.
Then we get amazing helicopter gunship business.
Yep. Then it's the toilet bit.
I think the toilet bit's before
this. I think the toilet bit's before that.
I think we missed the toilet bit.
I think we fucked it up.
Yeah. Right, rewind.
They go around to Roger's house, there's a bomb under the toilet. He's like, no, I'm not going anywhere. And the bomb squad's like, you're going to get blown up. And he's like, don't care. I'm really loyal.
No.
And then they tell each other they love each other.
You're missing all the comedy nuance of this bit. Because there is an amazing moment, which is, he is sat on the toilet, which is inherently funny. And at no point during the scene do they ever make a toilet joke.
Yeah.
It is played.
It smells like shit.
Pretty straight.
Yep. Because presumably he's pooped. And not flushed.
The closest you get is when Riggs goes down to look at the bomb. He said, "The things you do, you do for in the line of duty or something."
Yeah.
He's sat on a toilet that is wired to go, and then you get. I know we're doing favourite moments later, but this is one of my favourite moments of this entire film, where he's like, "Look, Riggs, if you get the bomb squad in, don't do it on the open frequency. Keep it quiet." Yeah. And then all you get is a slash cut to
a wide shot of
everybody.
There's a helicopter going over the top.
The fire department are there. The Coast Guard for some reason.
It's so good.
And then, yeah.
It's very good.
The other thing that I love is that they get him off the toilet in a beautiful bromance moment between the two of them. He has to pull him off the toilet.
He tells him he loves him even though he doesn't say he loves him.
Oh.
It's a beautiful moment.
Put him into the tub, pull the blanket over his head.
The
toilet gets blown out of the roof of the house. Really?
I have so many bits where I'm like, at the end in the shipyard when he's holding him.
Toilet gets blown out the roof of the house and lands on the car.
And lands on the car again, yeah.
Oh, so
well,
good.
This is the one. Is this the one or is it the third
moving
one?
Moving forward with the plot.
Okay, fine.
Right, so they declare war on the police.
Yes.
Cerise's
like, I'm not a cop tonight. And then Rog puts his badge in the desk. And then he's like, wait for my signal. I'm going to go to the schoolhouse.
They've basically, Riggs has managed to take his new girlfriend of about 2 hours from a bone-in to
like
a gun
being
show.
In love and stuff? Yeah,
to
it's crazy.
Underneath his trailer to escaping.
And he takes her home. Which is the
and then
dumbest.
He takes her home.
They're so dumb.
Go in, lock your door.
Unsurprisingly,
and then
they get captured by the bad guys. they found this in our secret hideout. Our house.
He wakes up, only to be informed by our favourite Irish South African.
Yes.
That
Peter Vorsted.
He was the one that killed his wife.
Imagine my surprise pulling back that blonde matted hair.
Which, don't get me wrong. It kind of works insofar as
they
stitch it up quite nicely.
Yeah.
However, it's a reach, man.
No, I think it works fine.
Oh, God.
It's Lethal Weapon 2. What do you want?
What?
It's not Godfather 2, it's Lethal Weapon 2.
It was, firstly, that was like 3 years ago. And they've just been wandering around doing drugs.
Well, they've never
shipping gold.
Well, he thought it was an accident that she died.
Well, no, it doesn't matter. Point is, the odds of those two people running into each other again.
Yeah, it's a film, Rob.
I'm just saying.
That's the point of films.
The odds of the toilet hitting his car, I will allow like... for comedic purposes.
Oh, so
purposes
that you're okay with? That you're right with? Okay, fine.
Yeah. Basically. We then get Riggs' repeated pie trick. He can dislocate his shoulder now. Doesn't do it in the first film. Does it a lot in the second film.
And a lot in the third
film. When it's convenient.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're right. No, it is weird that they
You get an amazing shot of the fact that they basically drowned Patsy Kensit before him.
That's some fucked up shit, that
Presumably bit. By just filling her pockets with sand, because she is not restrained in any way.
Yeah. It's like she's meant to be tied to a block or something.
Unless she's got, like, concrete boots on.
Sure. The old concrete booties.
The old concrete slippers.
But yes, so he escapes
the old Breeze Blockburks.
They very handily
the old
put him in
brick dust. No, I'm done.
So yeah, so he escapes. He does. I'm not a cop.
And then immediately and savagely kills the two guys who threw him in the lake.
Yeah. Just very much so.
He is rage personified.
He calls Raj and says, "Guess what? I'm gonna kill everyone." Like in the first film where he's like, guess what? We've got to get bloody on this one. In the second one, guess what? They've got to get bloody on this one.
Mm.
And so
what are you
going
to do, though, when they come for you?
What will you know? Wait for my signal. What's the signal? You'll know when you see it. The signal is pulling the house down a cliff.
I thought it was a vaudeville routine.
No, that's who's on first. But no, so he pulls the house down.
Literally brings the house down.
Literally pulls the house down. And that isn't a miniature or anything. That's a $500,000 thing.
Did they actually destroy a house?
It's a $500,000 stunt where they build a fake house on the side of a cliff and then pull it down.
So, I have one minor problem with that scene, which is he's just asked his partner to go in and rescue a witness in the house that
he pulls
the
house down while he's in it. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Rich is crazy, have you not heard?
He's not crazy.
Well, he said he's mad at one point.
Right.
But yeah, so anyway, so he pulls the house down, they save Leo, they let Leo run the siren while he drives back to the thing he wants it. Then they go down to the Eberwarden.
Because Murtaugh's actually done some detectiving.
He's actually done some police work.
Yeah.
They go down, and then he fights the Peter guy with, like, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Jailhouse Rock martial arts weird business. And then he kills him by dropping a big old thing on him.
He does so, by the way, to the sound of a violent xylophone.
Yes, he does. It's like a weird... Yeah, that is very weird.
It's cool.
He drops a big old thing on him. Then he gets shot loads by Arjun. And then he's like, diplomatic immunity.
And Murtaugh shoots him anyway.
And he says, it's just been revoked.
Ooh.
Such a good line.
And then he goes down and they cuddle a bit.
Yeah, and then they play Knocking on Heaven's Door, the Eric Clapton version. They cuddle a bit. And yeah, that's the end. Oh, he tries to give him a cigarette and he says, no, those things will kill you.
And they're laughing, but...
And then it's like, you can see in your eyes something else.
Right, that's it. Those are the two films.
That's Cheer Down by George Harrison at the end of the film, by the way.
Okay.
Then, yeah, there you go. Do you know, so? So, he was potentially going to die at the end of the second film.
Well, yeah,
you
told us that before.
He wrote... No, but in the original script for Play Dirty... He was going to die because essentially he'd been, like, taken in by the Murtaugh family and sacrifices himself in order to ensure their safety at the end of the script. So, but they didn't... They'd scrapped that script and Jeffrey Bone rewrote it, but then they were potentially... He was going to die at the end of the second film, having killed the man that killed his wife, killed Vicky, and, like, avenged Rika and all that kind of stuff. As much as I do like Lethal Weapon 3 and 4... I actually think it would have been better if Riggs had died at the end of this film. I think it would be so much more meaningful.
Nope, because then we wouldn't get my favourite line from Lethal Weapon 4.
Okay. What's your favourite line from Lethal Weapon 4?
Oh, you know, and you don't like it.
Is it when they go to the dentist's office and they're talking to the... No,
we'll find out.
No, okay. So anyway, so yes, that was made in 1989?
Yeah.
So 87 is Lethal Weapon, right?
Yeah.
88 is Die Hard, and 89 is Die Hard is Lethal Weapon 2, which is
91 is Die Hard 2.
A hell of a run of action movies for you. What a run!
So, are you aware of a potential original casting for Riggs?
There's a few, isn't there? There's like Paul Newman, Bruce Willis. Yeah.
Who would have then basically been in the entirety of the 80s action blockbuster?
Well, Mel Gibson was. considered for Die Hard, because that was in pre-production at the stage as well, at the same kind of time.
Wasn't he too busy making something wanky about magic?
Lady Hawk.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so. That, apparently he got... is it Hamlet or Macbeth he's in? Which film is he in?
He's done Hamlet.
So it's the movie of Hamlet that he got cast in because of his acting in the first Lethal Weapon. Like, that scene where he's essentially going to shoot himself is actually really good. He's really, really good
okay,
in that scene.
Okay. He's really good.
In the first one. He's really, really good.
He is, to be honest, the... Mel Gibson character gets played increasingly for laughs as you work through the series.
Yeah.
In the first one, you can see that actually he is acting the shit out of it, and he acts Glover off the screen.
Yes, 100%.
Because Glover does a whole bunch of stuff, shuffles around and he's an old black man.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but...
But like the Riggs role is such, way. A, it's such a bigger, meatier
role. He gets more
role.
And more serious as the films go on, to the point that we're not talking about it. We will in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
Lethal Weapon 3... Mm. Glover gets some of the best scenes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I do like the him, like, he's about to retire and he's woken up from his kind of sleepy existence as a just about to retire cop and all that kind of stuff. Midnight Run is often hailed as, like, the beginning of the real buddy cop kind of the Walter Hill movie with Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro.
Sure.
That came out slightly after this, I think. I think it came out in 88.
No, I'm sorry. If you're pointing up Buddy Cop...
But yeah...
This and Turner and Hooch. Yeah, yeah. What do you want?
this and Turner and Hooch. Yeah, absolutely. But this is... Their rapport and their chemistry immediately is so fucking good. That scene where he's... In the first one where he's the jumper... When he goes up to the top of the roof and all that kind of stuff, and they go into the shop afterwards, and he's like, you know, don't just nibble on the barrel, pull the trigger, and all that kind of stuff. They're so good together straight away.
Well, this was what was said when Blake did the original table read. Mm. He's on the record as saying that it was the best table read he'd ever done because they just owned it. They found nuance, they found comedy that he hadn't written.
Yeah.
And just on screen. In this case, on paper, but you know, on screen they just clicked.
Yeah, and it really, like, you really feel like he is part of. He gets taken in by the Murtaugh family. Like, you really feel that, especially in the second one when he's telling the story about the gold pen and all that kind of stuff of Trish, and Roger comes in. Roger comes in, but he hasn't told Roger the gold pen story, but he's told Trish and not him.
Yeah,
it's just sort of like a really nice. Yeah, maybe I take these films too seriously because I love them so much.
And then you get a scene where a guy gets sat on a bomb toilet.
Yeah, and then there's bomb toilet.
And his daughter is in an advert for condoms.
That is, and Jack, the contractor called Jack McGee. The actor is called Jack McGee, who the character is called Matty McGee, because they just keep calling him McGee.
Sure.
Maybe want to buy rubbers right now. Apparently, like in the trivia you read online, it's like, oh, that was an ad lib. Like, yeah, no shit. It's funny, but okay.
He has three lines. That's
George, I got a gun. It's when she's got the boyfriend over. Anyway, I literally could just literally talk about this, those films scene by scene. But anyway, but yes. So the whole cast is, I think, awesome. I mean, it's the captain is Richard Donner's, their captain is Richard Donner's cousin, who is basically his acting career is Richard Donner films. He's the detective who gets run over by the train at the beginning of Superman.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Sorry, but the producer, was that a spoiler alert thing that you were just doing then?
Well, yeah.
You haven't seen Superman, the Richard Donner film?
Also, just to be clear, that action has no bearing on the rest of the film at all.
Also, we did an episode on that. You didn't watch it?
Barely listened to it.
I've got a version you can borrow, just to warn you, it's the three-hour
very long
mega
version.
Cut.
Yeah. No, it's worth it. Yeah, that Mary Ellen Trainer as the psychiatrist appears in all the films where she's always really concerned about him and that kind of stuff.
She does. She's annoying and doesn't need to be in the films.
No, she's quite funny. It's a nice little thing. Someone's so critical. These are the best films that have been made.
And also, she's a psychiatrist. She walks in, there's a guy on the toilet, and she's like, I've seen everything you could possibly see. Guy on a toilet. I was wrong. Really?
I've never seen a man.
You are a terrible psychiatrist.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Presumably, you're dealing with people who've literally had limbs blown off.
Considering,
right?
Like, the especially the first film, it's all about, like, his trauma and his psychology of, like, you know what I mean? Like, his suffering and all that kind of stuff. The his PTSD or that kind of survivor's guilt and that kind
of
stuff.
I think he's all about that.
And then he's, well, he's all about it, but yeah, but it's a significant part of it. The psychiatrist character just played off as just like, those crazy psychiatrists. He'll just be a man about it, it's fine. You're like, oh yeah. That's what you do. Man up with like war trauma and surviving the death of your wife. Just yeah. Man up, innit? Just man up. Yeah. But yeah. But yes, so that's the cast. And I love them.
I actually, I'm embarrassed to say I had to look this up because having watched, or rewatched rather,
yep.
The first film, there is a certain moment, and it's basically when the car's upside down with the hand grenades in it.
Yes.
That is the first film, right?
Yeah.
Yes, just checking. Also, seriously, you're a big bad guy running away from being immediately busted by the cops. Why are you loading hand grenades into your boot?
So that it can blow up in a minute, because it'll be cool.
Don't get me wrong, I appreciate they're probably quite expensive, but they're not that expensive.
No, and also loan priorities. Like yeah. Money, maybe the drugs.
Money,
but,
drugs, yeah. Maybe some gold. Nope, gotta take my grenades.
Gotta take these hand grenades. We haven't used them at all in this film so far, so we better use them now.
They used one of them. Oh no, it was a smoker.
It's a smoke grenade, yeah. And that's, yes, Danny Glover.
So, and there is a moment where you listen to the music in that scene, and then all of a sudden you're watching Die Hard.
How do you mean?
There's a reason for that, because the same motif,
right,
which is that kind of repeated horn section,
bam,
bam, bam, bam, bam, bam, bam,
oh, yeah,
is apparently something that Michael Kamen decided to recycle.
Yeah, no, I bet, yeah.
Why wouldn't he?
No, of course. Of course.
Michael Kamen, let's take a moment.
It's quite prolific.
Quite? You want to go with quite?
It's mental, isn't it? Yeah.
You get one chance to update your...
Enormously prolific?
I would go with enormously. He's prolific with a capital D.
And he's got incredible hair, by the way.
He has got incredible... He's also dead now, so...
Oh, yeah, indeed.
But, yeah, so let's have a quick run-through of some of Michael Kamen's non-film-related musical triumphs.
Right.
He has collaborated with... Are you ready for this? I have a very long list.
No, that's fine. Go.
Pink Floyd, and after Pink Floyd, both Dave Gilmour and Roger Waters.
Oh, nice.
One of the only people to be allowed to collaborate with either of them, let alone both of them.
Didn't take sides, that's nice.
Queen, he did the orchestration on Who Wants to Live Forever.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Eric Clapton.
Of course, yeah.
Both movies. On The Edge of Darkness, but also on these movies, Eric Clapton famously plays...
And I suppose also then George
Riggs
Harrison.
Riggs' theme.
Guitar, yeah. And did the Knocking on Heaven's Door cover and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Who else? Oh, Roger Daltrey.
Yep.
So that'd be The Who.
Yep.
Aerosmith did a live orchestral version of Dream On.
Wow.
An MTV special. Tom Petty, Bon Jovi, David Bowie, Brian Ferry, The Eurythmics, Rush, Metallica.
Bloody
on
hell.
Nothing Else Matters.
What?
Def Leppard, Herbie Hancock, Tim Curry, The Cranberries, Bryan Adams.
Wow.
Coldplay, Sting. And Guns N' Roses in their performance of November Rain for the MTV Music Awards.
Okay.
And that isn't even the full list.
Enormous orchestra.
There's a whole bunch of people on there that I'd never heard of. So,
And other people. But it's him, it's Eric Clapton, and it's David Sanborn.
On
is the
sax.
Saxophone guy. But that guy, that David Sanborn guy, is also insanely... He's everything. He's in everything. All the bits of saxophone music you heard in the 80s, 90s,
I'm not done with Mr. Kamen yet.
Oh, I'm
Kamen?
Sorry. Kamen? I'm sorry.
He then went on to score movies.
Yes.
Because, you know, why not? He has done the score for... And please tell me if there's any of these you haven't heard of. The Dead Zone. For Queen and Country.
Yep.
Polyester. Brazil.
Yep.
Someone to Watch Over Me.
Yep.
The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yeah, he does a lot of Terry Gilliam stuff. All the Terry Gilliam stuff.
Three Musketeers, the original. Not the original, actually, that's a lie. The original
License
was
to
in
Kill?
The 50s. Coming to that, Highlander.
Oh, wow. Oh, so that maybe that's how he met Queen.
It is.
Yeah.
X-Men. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Did X-Men? Wow.
Apparently.
Prince of Thieves. Well, so that's how he met Bryan Adams.
License to Kill.
Yeah.
The first three of the Die Hards.
Right.
Mr. Holmes' Opus, The Iron Giant, Splitting Hairs, Airs, Frequency, Memento, and many
Memento?
Others. He also scored Band of Brothers on HBO.
Okay, so enormously prolific is probably a good
His biggest triumph, by the way, is this. He scored the trailer for 2007's A B-Movie.
Yes. Mic drop. That's the end of the episode.
Done.
Thanks for joining us. A B-movie. the Jerry weirdest Seinfeld's thing is, ants movie.
Just the trailer. No, he just scored the trailer. That was it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he did. He apparently would literally do music for anybody who asked. Mm. Probably they could pay him, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Insane.
That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I really like the music in these movies. I love that saxophone refrain from Murtaugh and that kind of stuff.
I really do. It's very much a, like, you walk into a room with your eyes closed and you will know this movie is on.
Yeah.
However,
like that 90s noir kind of feel.
Hum it.
No, sure. Exactly. There's no tune, is there? It's all. And it's very much, there is a lot of bits which are very, you can feel that it's scored like along with the movie as opposed to a piece of music that's been written that sits alongside it. Does that make sense? There's like certain bits in the first one, for example, where there'll be a camera angle, like when there's the jumper, the guy on the top of the building, he cuts at one point and there's a shot of like the crowd on the ground looking up and there's a Santa Claus in the crowd. So sleigh bells suddenly start ringing and stuff like that. So it's like really closely scored to the actual pace of the film, which is why, I mean, I assume you wouldn't be able to listen to it. It would be weird to listen to it without watching the film. It wouldn't,
I mean,
wouldn't stand up
it,
as a piece of music. Yeah.
But no, there are notable takeaways. So Clapton recorded a like full-length version of Riggs' theme.
Yeah.
And there's, the track Lethal Weapon at the end of the first film, which is uncredited.
Yeah. What's it called? Does it chill down? Is it that George Harrison movie? George Harrison song at the end of the second one?
There's a special version of. Is it Here Comes Santa Claus or Santa Claus?
At
the beginning of the first film.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's all over the place.
So good.
So, right.
And let's not forget, it is a Christmas film. Rewatching this recently has been the first non-Christmas viewing I've had of it in quite some time. Because it's always, that's it. It's Christmas, it's Gremlins, Die Hard, and Lethal Weapon. That's my business.
In that order.
In that order. Absolutely. So something I would like to talk about is that this movie was the first movie...
The original blaxploitation film.
Yes, sure. Made...
No, not where you were going?
15 years after blaxploitation was a thing, but sure, okay, yeah. It is the...
Sequel to Titanic.
Yes, and also the first movie written by Shane Black.
There you go.
Shane Black, who is one of my favourite screenwriters of all time. I love every single movie he has ever written. He's written Lethal Weapon, The Monster Squad, which is amazing. I highly recommend you watch it if you haven't. Lethal Weapon 2, Last Boy Scout, best Bruce Willis film.
Amazing.
Sorry, Die Hard. Last Action Hero, The Long Kiss Goodnight, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which he also directed. He directed and wrote Iron Man 3, which is basically Lethal Weapon 2, except there are Iron Man suits in it. The Nice Guys, which is awesome, is the best Ryan Gosling film for me. I don't think the other ones really aimed at me, but to be fair. And The Predator, which is fine.
The Predator?
The Predator.
Not
the
Predator.
Not Predator. He's in Predator, and he did unscripted rewrites in Predator, but he didn't write or direct it officially. But The Predator is like the newest one that came out in 2018. It's okay.
I'm just trying to think. There's wheels within wheels.
Yeah.
Danny Glover was in Predator 2.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Oh, my God.
The secret best Predator movie.
No.
Not really. No. Obviously
hard
it's Predator.
Pass.
No.
Absolutely
so
not.
He still holds the record to this day, in fact, for, I think it was Long Kiss Goodnight, for the highest amount paid for a spec script, which is essentially a studio saying, you're amazing, write us a movie and we'll just give you some money. It doesn't matter what movie it is.
They literally give him a check and say, write something.
Here's $4 million, write me a script. And he wrote The Long Kiss Goodnight, which is not his best movie. Is awesome, though. Gina Davis is the badass assassin lady. It's fucking awesome. Great.
All right, go on.
Another Christmas movie. All of his movies are set at Christmas, invariably, because he says it brings people together and it's something...
It brings people together. It's a time so I can blow them apart.
Exactly. It's a time that brings people together and like it's like a great unifier. So that he says that it helps people relate to the film because like Christmas is such a lovely time of year and all that kind of stuff. It's very weird.
So not crazy hot anywhere apart from the West.
Well, exactly. And all of his movies are set in LA. He's very
LA-centric.
LA-centric, certainly. I mean, all of his movies, there's LA freeways. somebody jumping off a bridge of a highway and all that kind of good business. It's always,
look, if it's what you grow up around or what you know, then go for it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Much sooner that than say try and grow corn on Mars.
Yeah, sure, exactly. Fuck you, Mars. I love that movie. I think it's potatoes that he grows, isn't it?
Potatoes.
Oh, good. We're doing accents.
That's, you can't not do that accent when you say potato.
Fair enough, fair enough. But yeah, I mean, he's been a long-time ongoing supposed Doc Savage. Have you ever heard of Doc Savage? It's like a pulp comic book from the 50s. The Golden Man of Tomorrow.
I'm shrugging,
supposedly,
which doesn't really
supposedly,
help.
Supposedly writing.
Okay.
But yeah, it...
What else you got?
Yeah.
Is that it?
That is it. He's awesome, and he made loads of films, and I love him.
Okay.
Strong segment, Mike. Strong segment.
I mean, if it hadn't been for the fact that the composer for this film was who he was,
yeah,
I think that would be impressive. I
feel like we should have done this bit first.
Oh, well. Never learn.
Yeah, indeed.
Score one for the soundtrack team.
Yeah, ooh, indeed. Which brings us to recommendations. We haven't done a movie in a while. It feels a bit weird.
It does. If you like this, watch it again.
Yeah, and watch Lethal Weapon 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. Watch everything else. Watch Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Watch Long Kiss Goodnight. I'm definitely going home and watching Long Kiss Goodnight tonight. Long Kiss Goodnight. Watch Last Boy Scout,
watch
Die Hard. Last Boy Scout is a rare movie, which is weirdly dark and noir, and it's got a scene where Bruce Willis falls asleep in his car drunk and some kids throw a dead squirrel on him. It's very odd. It's got Damon Wayans in it. Very strange. It is an amazing movie. Bruce Willis kicks a guy through the rotating rotors of a helicopter. It's good stuff. It's good
stuff. Kicks him or drops him?
Kicks him off the crane onto drops him off to the air. It's great stuff. He punches a guy's nose into his brain and kills him.
Fine.
Bruce Willis says, amazing scene. He says, everybody hates you. You're a loser. And you're going to lose. It's great stuff.
Pop.
And then Pop punches him in the face. Long Kiss Goodnight, yes. Kiss Kiss Bang, yes. Nice Guys, yes. Die Hard, yes. I mean, shit. Just late 80s action movies, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're of a type. There were lots of them.
Total Recall.
What about other Fuck buddy it. Cop?
Well, as I said earlier, actually, Midnight Run is an incredible movie if you like the buddy cop dynamic. Charles Grodin, who passed away last week, unfortunately. Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. Robert De Niro is a bounty hunter who has to escort an accountant, Charles Grodin, across country because he's the accountant for the mob. He's got to inform on them, so he has to move them across country. And then corrupt police, the mafia, all sorts of people are chasing them. And it's like a comedy action jaunt. It's amazing. It is absolutely amazing. Robert De Niro doing a rare, good comedy role. definitely watch that, 100%. What are the good buddy movies? Men in Black.
I'll give you Men in Black.
That's a great
Rush
film.
Hour.
Rush Hour 1 is good?
No.
Don't watch Rush Hour 3 because Roman Polanski fingers Jackie Chan. Yeah, he gives him a full body check, but he doesn't take his rings off is the joke. The joke being that Roman Polanski fingered Jackie Chan but didn't take his rings off.
And also Jackie Chan famously does his own stunts.
Well, yeah. And so is Roman Polanski. No, sorry. Moving very swiftly on. Are there good body cop movies?
I was always a fan of Money Talks. Charlie Sheen.
Money Talks.
It's like low budget, but it has some good action.
What's the movie with Jim Belushi and Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Red something?
Red Heat?
Red Heat.
Red Heat. That's clearly a recommendation that we could all remember definitely what it was called.
Well, no, the thing is, we could all remember exactly what it looked like. We just couldn't remember what it was called, and that's
Twins.
Because... Oh, fuck off. Right, you've been listening to... No. The one thing I would say is don't necessarily think that just because Glover's in it or...
Oh, Payback with Mel Gibson is an amazing movie.
It is, but watch the original, it's better.
I prefer the director's cut.
What?
Yeah.
The original of Payback.
Oh, no.
Burt Lancaster.
No, not the Parker movie. I mean the director's cut of Brian Helgeland's Payback.
Yeah.
Is what I mean.
No, yes. Watch the original.
But don't watch the movie Parker starring Jason Statham.
No, do watch that.
Because he does a Texan accent in it, for some reason, and it's so bad. It's so bad.
Just watch it because it's got Jason Statham in it, and that's what we do.
That's why I watched it.
Would you recommend watching the Lethal Weapon TV show?
No, don't watch Lethal Weapon TV show. It's horseshit.
Look, it might be good. So
people might,
I'm not
going to. People might like it, to be fair, but equally...
People are idiots.
Don't watch... Yes, yes. Well, yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. Don't watch it expecting, oh, I really like the film. It's just like a police procedural. And they replace Martin Riggs with Sean William Scott halfway through it anyway, so it's weird.
So they're not thinking of a next Lethal Weapon.
They are, apparently, they're doing Final Weapon, which is the worst title of all time. Where
surely it would be Lethal Weapon The Last Shot or something.
Something like that.
The Lethalist Weapon.
The Lethalist Weaponist. But they're all coming back, apparently. Richard Donner's going to direct, and Richard Donner's saying it's going to be the last film we'll ever make. But, I mean,
it's
going to
go either way, because they're basically going to spend about a gajillion quid on blowing shit up.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's either going to be amazing or terrible.
Yeah. And I don't think... I mean, really, for the amount of action that they do, I mean, Mel Gibson's probably in quite good shape if he's off the booze, but he's still 70 years old.
I mean, that beard is definitely...
Well, he was born in 1956. Yeah. Mogus was born in 1956, which makes him how old? Nearly 70, basically.
It's fine, he's... Yeah, 65. Are you saying he's too old for this shit?
I'm saying he might actually...
They're clearly going to switch that and get him to deliver that line.
But the fourth movie, they're already pretty fucking old for that shit, aren't they? He finds Jet Li in the fourth one.
He does.
I forgot about that. Fuck it, I'm watching Lethal Weapon 4 when I get home.
And on that note, you've got to listen to us do all of this again next time.
It's just me pissing myself laughing that Mel Gibson fights Jet Li.
Because we're carrying the Lethal Weapon train. The Lethal Weapon train is rolling on.
Yeah.
In our next episode, we will be covering off Lethal Weapon 3 and 4.
Let's have it.
All right.
Sonny's so aggro at the
sure.
end. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, fucking
you,
do
you
it
can
in.
Have it. I've just said you can have it.
Oh, good.
And they can have it.
Fine.
Everybody gets some.
All right.
All right.
As long as I'm getting some.
No, you don't
but
get any.
Other people getting their fair share.
I don't know. This is not a damn democracy. It's a podcast.
Oh, okay. Fine. I get it. I got you.
You have been listening to We're Drunk and We Know Things, recorded outside of Crusty J's in St. Helier. We, I'm guessing, just talked for like an hour and a half about Lethal Weapon, right?
Oh, well, don't have to guess, mate. We did do that.
Yeah, okay.
You were here.
For some of it.
Some of it just... That's why
might
we wear sunglasses.
A bit.
That's why we wear sunglasses. It's fair enough.
Yeah. It's like a tactical nap, right? This is an opportunity. We've been here for a bit. Had a few beers. If you see me do this, I'm just nodding without saying anything.
I'm asleep right now.
Yeah.
You talk first.
Hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to...
Stop.
Sorry.
A complete clusterfuck.
Stop.
The second you said it. I'm just turning off auto lock on my phone, sorry, so that it doesn't lock, because I need to have the thing on my phone.
I mean, the listeners need to know that.
They need to know. This is behind the scenes business that is important.
Yeah,
for them to
know. Behind the curtain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, lifting the skirt.
Lifting the skirt of theatre. To show its undercarriage to all that will survey it. Sticky undercarriage. Right, anyway. Okay, so now that's out of the way, god damn it. Your wife's arriving, so we should stop for a second to say hello to her.
I don't see why. Never had before.